All right, everybody, jumping right into this week's episode. No intro, no outro. Your girl is doing as much as she can right now to make sure that I am fulfilling my promise to you, which is a podcast every 2 weeks, in addition to all the other shit I have going on. But it's a beautiful lesson for me. And also, I am so deeply and committed to this work and even more fired up now since a TikTok fiasco. As of the moment I am making this podcast, which is literally right before I post it, I have been banned on TikTok, which is preposterous. I have had videos flagged that have no business being flagged, and there's just spiritual warfare du jour, which means I must be doing something right. So thank you very much to all of you. However, I have a very big ask. Now more than ever, I will need you to please, if it feels in alignment with you, to support the work and tell a friend, call a friend, share the content, you know, get the book, continue to awaken yourselves and ripple this into the collective with your big beaming hearts, because shit is getting fucking real. I'm gonna break it down to you today. But I will preface something in that for all the marketers out there who listen to my podcast and all the branders, yes, in theory, it would be extraordinarily helpful for everyone, including my team, if I batched this content. But I cannot do that because I need to be inspired and I honor that aspect of myself. So that is a nightmare for my team, but better for me. Okay, so in this week's podcast, I'm going to talk about several things. Number one, what it's like to grow up with an emotionally immature parent and how those play out in relationship dynamics through enabling behavior, emotional coercion, and then how that shows up in relationships with your spouse and or friends and siblings. But before I dive into some of that stuff, and I will be answering some questions at the end of this podcast, I want to talk about what's on my heart in addition to the emotional immature family systems, because I, as you know, I'm writing a second book with the other second thousands at this point, additional sessions specifically focused on relationships, i.e. relationship with self, and then ergo relationship, romantic relationships, the patterns that come up amongst those dynamics, but also what it's been like to launch this book as a spontaneous manifester. So this question came in through Telegram and it was so good that I thought it would be great to start this week's episode off with, because of course, as you know, I've launched the book, Is This All There Is? And the response has been amazing. I'm very deeply grateful for all of you. And I also learned a lot. I thought that it was so big of a book and, you know, people are going to need like very bite-sized, digestible delivery method of this type of subject matter and content. But it turns out there are a couple of camps. There are those who are just ready to like mainline inject this content and this book. And there are those who are really loving the way that it's dripped on Substack and having it audible and also being able to read and listen at the same time creates a completely different experience. And you're also getting the frequency of my voice in the podcasts and in the audible experience. And to me, it's really, really important for people to have access to this work. So I'm thrilled to be able to offer both. The Kindle version will be up in a day or so. So by the time this podcast episode already airs, you guys will have the Kindle version. And that's going to be super fun because you can repost Kindle quotes on social media and hopefully the ripple effect will continue to reach folks into the physical and multiverse. So I'm not sure I've actually shared this, but when I first got the idea to write a book, and when I first started Super Freak and got the idea for it and got early pieces of the type of work that I would be doing, which is just scanning people and reading patterns, I just knew it would be really important to have a book. And I focused a lot on just reading people and building, you know, and establishing a rapport with my clients at the time, and also building a rapport with an audience. I focused a lot on authority building content, which is kind of weird to say because I think the people who build authority online are people who are really connected with their message and what they're here to do. And as a byproduct, they emerge as quote unquote an authority. So whatever that means, I just knew that I needed to get the book out And I originally hired a ghostwriter to be able to do that. I said, just interview me. Like, I'm really busy. I'm reading people all day. We can have a 5-hour interview and you'll be able to get everything you need out, you know, done for the book. I'm sure. Like, when I just riff, I just fucking go. So just get me going for a few hours and I'm sure there's a book in there. So we had our interviews, and by the time we got to the first introduction draft, I was like, man, we are way off in tone and like vibe, and this ain't it. This is not it. And I kind of like started to panic. So I had rewritten a lot of it and like sent it back to my ghostwriter / editor. And I said, hey, I think we need to go more in this direction. It has to feel like cool, and it needs to synthesize more memoir. And is there a way for you to include some of the stories we talked about of my life and, you know, what I want? You mentioned, you know, what is it that you appreciate most in relationships, and what do you want your legacy to be, and all these like kind of generic questions that editors ask potential authors. And I said, I want my legacy to be irrelevancy. I want this information to be ubiquitous. People should be able to clear their own patterns, and they should have this access of knowledge. In terms of my, you know, most appreciated characteristics in people, it's 1000% loyalty. I just need to be able to trust you, get you. I need to know that people have my back and they're not going to sit there and count beans on who did what for who and when they did it. I was like, I don't have time for that. So she came back a second round and I still felt we were really off. And by this time, by the time I think I got second or third draft, it had become pretty clear to me that I was going to be the one that had to write it. And we amicably came to a new agreement, and I was grateful for her stewardship in helping me overcome a lot of this like anxiety and fear about learning how to write a book. I mean, I had given a bunch of brain dump pages over that had so many different types of tones, a hyper-academic tone, hyper-scientific tone, hyper-goofy, funny, like don't take myself serious tone with loads and loads of emojis everywhere. And I had to kind of find a blend of all of that all of a sudden, immediately, having never written a book before and also hadn't really done any long form. I mean, I started Substack to kind of play and quietly, like kind of be a messy writer, like low key on the side. And then all these like, quote unquote, in my mind, like legit, hyper published, incredibly eloquent, very gifted writers had already been on the scene. And it kind of felt like a cool kids club I was totally not a part of. But I was like, you know what, fuck it. I've never been a part of any club. I'm going to fucking create my own like I always do. And it just felt like a really safe place to be messy. And I still feel that way. And that's why I have decided to publish the book on Substack, because it was like a place for me to come home to myself. And it's afforded me that opportunity. It doesn't censor. It's community driven. It's not nasty. It's been amazing. And I'm so deeply grateful for it. So this period of me condensing and learning how to be a writer happened in a period of like 9 months. Me just showing up every single day for myself in this way and writing what I was feeling. I didn't care about if I was writing against the book. I just treated my writing time as something that I would just turn into a cathartic healing experience. And what ended up happening is, because I'm like a spontaneous writer, even though I set up a schedule for myself to write every day, what I chose to write about was very spontaneous. So I still stayed in the discipline of the craft, but I gave myself freedom in what I would be able to choose to talk about. And if I didn't feel like talking, and if I didn't feel like writing, then I would dedicate that time to researching anything I wanted, that as long as it was inside of the keywords of the book. So broad psychology, self-concept, you know, if there's anything in Science Alert that kind of caught my eye, and how do you handle procrastination? What does the data say? And so I would either be crunching data, and that would unravel a whole thread to go down to. And if I didn't really feel like talking about quantum stuff or sciencey stuff, then I would talk about like the 14-year-old girl stuff, like sad girl, perpetual sad girl stuff, fat girl, skinny girl stuff, you know, depressed stuff, Lana Del Rey stuff. And a lot of that ended up actually making the book. So I turned my angst into essays, or I would turn like the idea of a line into an essay. Like I knew like New York for the third time, or New York's a really great place if you want to be sad. Like I would take those ideas and see if I can turn that into something. And or if there was data around, let's say, the correlation between location and sadness, right? Like, is there a scientific correlation? And do certain cities have patterns Like, do you overcome a certain thing? And like, what was my experience living in New York? And what did I observe and notice there? And at the time, I was this age running these types of patterns, and this is what I noticed in New York. And how could I apply that as a case study to something that people could find applicable or reflective in their lives today? So that was actually really fun to do, and it was a fun exercise. And that is how I ended up writing this book as an indirect kind of manifester. And I wrote a ton of shit. I wrote loads and loads and loads and loads that ended up kind of getting thrown in there. And then I would refine it and edit it and pull out and clean up. And can you say less with more? And then I kind of had to put it down for a while and then just kind of go back into reading people and kind of relaxing and sitting on it, not really doing anything with it, kind of letting it sit for a minute. And then something else would come up. I would be in relationship with other people in my life and there would be a theme, right? Like either avoidance theme or a codependent nuance that came up. And I started to really get into the nuance and the layers of things. And then I would get these essays that would come out of me and then I would kind of find a place for them in the book. And I wrote my last, like final round. It was a section, oh gosh, I think it was a section about self that went into the center part of the book that I think had to do with abuse. And I wrote that part last, and that happened right before I went into editing, like in July of this year. And I still found a couple of like spelling errors that you miss because you're rereading things like seven times. Even myself and the editor that I had, that was a new editor from the old one, who did a fantastic job at helping me with structure and loving the work, totally got it, is an editor herself for her group of clients. And we still miss stuff. And so of course, having to go back and constantly refine. And publishing your first book is like literally watching your kid go off to college. There's such attachment, and I didn't realize I would have all this stuff come up because there's always an aspect of me that plays a little bit of the rebel. Like I've kind of had to fight for my space in the world my whole life. And letting this one go and letting it into the ether has been kind of a terrifying experience. I think that subconsciously I tried to protect myself in a way by dripping it, and instead of just releasing the whole kit and caboodle all at the same time. But I've gotten over that. I'm ready to release it. It's yours now. It's not mine anymore. It wasn't even mine to begin with. I'm just the conduit for this information. It's everyone can have it. It's yours now. And I can't wait to see how you guys read the rest of it and what you think and what revelations you have. And then when I get to the physical copies, which I'm really trying to find a publisher who will do this for me, but 512 pages is kind of a lot. So that's coming hopefully by the beginning of the year. So again, thank you for that. It'll kind of be fun. You can bookmark it and go back to pieces and chapters that you liked. And I can't wait to see a physical copy of it. I haven't even seen one myself yet. So lots of growth still to come on all of this. I will definitely launch the second book differently, but this was already a very beautiful and intimate experience. And I want to thank you guys all very much for that. So I would say as an indirect manifester, just set up time to like go to the playground, like set up a play date with yourself and then see what shows up. So if you don't take it lightly, then it's going to get really heavy. And I would say that one of the things I committed to the 13-year-old version of me, who is who I wrote this book for first, then I wrote it for everybody else, is to commit to her. And she's worth fighting for if you don't feel like you can do it yourself at this moment. Because when you heal the younger version of you who thinks that they can't or is up against their own edges with imposter, maybe it's a current version of you now that's 2 seconds old, right? If you commit to yourself in that way, or a younger version of you, it's almost easier to do that than the version that you're running now. And once you heal her or him, then it ripples into the present version of you and you're able to show up in a different way. One of the things I've said about building self-esteem is to keep your promises to yourself. And if you can do that, you're going to build more and more and more confidence through these small esteemable acts and showing up for myself. Whether or not that's self-care, taking a walk, taking baths, listening to meditations myself, rereading my own stuff, rereading my own meditations. And yes, I do reread my own shit. And I do listen to my own meditations if I don't know something, because it's literally just pure source talking in a frequency that I feel safe with. And I can say I feel safe with myself. So I'd rather listen to me than something else at this point. And I know a lot of other people who are doing any type of transformative work will do the same. I'll say this. I trust the work. And I trust all the work I've done, no matter what level I've been at. So if I just need to stay in the practice of dropping into a meditation and having something going on in the background helps me do that, then I do that. But those little esteemable acts help me continue to build certainty in what I'm doing. So my why and my purpose is bigger than my resistance to showing up to the work itself. Okay. So the next thing I want to move into in this podcast is emotional immature family systems. So this, I've been talking a little bit about it, but I've been writing more about it than I have been talking about it, even though I have addressed this in throughout loads and loads of sessions with you guys and individual meditations, specifically the mother wound and the father wound. But when you are in this type of dynamic, this is how it shows up in relationships. And I'm going to give like three examples. So see if you can relate to these feelings. Number one, just as an example, you feel emotionally lonely around your parents and or the relationship that you're in or certain friendships, including siblings. Number two, you feel like interactions feel one-sided and frustrating. So EI parents are self-absorbed. They have limited empathy and they make interactions with them feel one-sided because it's all about them. So if they don't have the access to regulating their own nervous systems and putting words to how they're feeling because they're used to spiritually bypassing their own feelings because they're used to being the center of everything because they grew up with an emotionally unavailable mother or a father figure that had to compensate for that by always being like the entertainer, the funny guy, the clown, the chatty one. We didn't really talk about anything serious. We brushed a lot of things under the rug. And or let's say you had an alcoholic and also totally avoidant father, then you're sitting there with feelings going, what the fuck do I do with these? It's never a surprise to me when I get into sessions and I'm speaking to so many of you and you know more about your parents' issues than they do because they have no clue how to self-reflect. So the strategy that a child will use that grew up in this type of dynamic will be or will look like this. They will become hypervigilant. They will perform for love. They will become workaholics. They will fill their schedules to the nth degree. They will constantly show up for other people at the expense of themselves. They will make endless bids for connection to try to have some type of, you know, fill some kind of hole that they have in their inside of them by making meals out of the little crumbs of their EI parents' glimpse, like small moment of emotional literacy. They will have a reflection. They will be normal. They will say partially something close to what we have always been wanting to hear for a minute. And the light will come back into our little spines for like 1 second. And we will get so excited for just a second. And we will create this expectation that maybe they won't be let down again. And then maybe things can change. And that some of the things that you've been doing have actually been working. And that all of a sudden you're worthy enough in your mind to be loved and cared. Not really understanding that EI parents really have no fucking idea what they're ever doing wrong. They really don't. Which takes me to the third point, that they come first and you come secondary. EI parents are extremely self-referential, meaning that everything is always, always about them. They expect you to accept second place when it comes to their needs. That's just a standard. They elevate their own interest to the point that yours feel downgraded. That just is also another standard. They're not looking for an equal relationship. They want blind allegiance. And this is where we get into coercion. You will feel very trapped and coerced in an emotionally immature parent dynamic. Which takes me to the fourth thing, that you will feel trapped or coerced in a relationship because EI parents insist you put them first and we let them run the show. To this end, they coerce you with shame, guilt, and or fear until you essentially do what they want. And that will look like this. Wow, are you sure that you don't want to host this year's Thanksgiving? I was really hoping that you would do that. That's interesting. Did you change your mind for some reason that you didn't want to be able to spend time with the family or like very passive aggressive. That is guilt, shame, projection, fear. If you don't do what they want you to do and they don't have somewhere to go and you're not making them look good in any way, that is going to be very threatening to their identity and they don't like that. And so they will project all of that shit onto you and then you will eat that. You will eat that and then you will stuff it in somewhere in your body. It will manifest as fibromyalgia or some crazy shit like that. And then you are bitter. And this is where body changes. This is where I've seen gene mutations being created from this level of resentment. And you chandelier, you bottleneck until it basically all the emotions come down into you, because you will martyr and self-abandon yourself to death until you literally just pops that lid right off the top and you just have a breakdown. You just melt down. You have nothing left and the nervous system fries, completely fries out. Feeling trapped is not fun. No one wants to do that. But feeling emotionally coerced and trapped in relationships where you're constantly not made to feel like you are worthy or matter, and the person that is doing that to you has no fucking clue about their behavior, nor do they have any interest in changing, that's incredibly painful dynamic. So especially if you have kids and you're coming from this place where you want to have your kids have a relationship with their grandparents, but you know what kind of cost that's coming with, it's a tricky position to be in because you're having to do way more heavy lifting to take on everybody else's emotional baggage to try to make relationships work than is necessary. And that's where the work is. Those who grow up in this type of dynamic and they get into romantic relationships, they will reincarnate a version of their parent that was either emotionally immature and or totally avoidant, dismissive, and or completely made them feel like they didn't matter. So they have a core abandonment wound. They will either attract somebody who is capable of very little, so exactly like what they saw in their father figure, or a completely self-centered narcissistic type of person that would be, let's say, the emotionally immature mother figure, and or they have manifested a codependent enmeshment type of relationship. I can't remember if I said the fifth thing or not, but another key factor of EI parents is they won't be emotionally intimate or vulnerable with you. They have no capacity to do that. Although they're highly reactive emotionally, which is another big one, so you're kind of walking on eggshells all the time around this type, EI parents actually avoid their deeper feelings because they fear being emotionally exposed. And they hide behind this very defensive exterior and their pouty childlike behavior. So you're constantly having to pander to them and or figure out the exact right way to handle their emotional fragility and their fragile egos. Number six is they communicate through emotional contagion. So I'm writing all of this, by the way, in the second book, but this is just a little preview. So instead of talking about their feelings, EI people express themselves non-verbally through emotional contagion, i.e. like crossing your boundaries or getting you upset. So it justifies and validates their level of upset. This is where the enmeshment comes in, where you kind of don't know where one parent ends and begins and how you'll see children completely change around a very specific parent because they're literally trying to figure out how to regulate their nervous system unconsciously around a functional freeze. So you are functioning, but your nervous system is in a freeze, fawn, let me get into autopilot mode and production mode to try to mitigate how uncomfortable I feel right now. See the breakdown in relationship dynamics when, because the EI parent expects you to constantly be emotionally attuned with them, and that's how the relationship works, when one person starts to get healthy and they start to see this shit, they get mad. Man, they get mad. Like, when you heal, sick people get pissed. You'll notice too, which takes me to number seven, that as you continue to get healthy and you start to notice this stuff, you might have outbursts because you're trying to reclaim your power and space. And you'll notice during this time that the EI parent will become even more and more disrespectful of your boundaries, individuality, and your space. And that is going to cause even more havoc. And that's because EI parents think boundaries imply rejection, and meaning that you don't care enough about them to give them free access to your life. And so this is why they act incredulous, offended, or hurt if you ask them to respect your privacy, which I've had to do in my life. I've been flabbergasted that my mail would be opened. or certain calls would be made on my behalf, which I didn't ask for. And that is because they believe family and roles are sacrosanct to them. And they don't understand why you should want space or an individual identity apart from them. They don't understand why you can't just be like them, think like them, and have the same beliefs and values. You are their child, after all, therefore you belong to them. Even when you're grown, they expect you to remain their compliant child. Or, if you insist on your own life, always at least follow their advice. So this is where it becomes incredibly narcissistic. I know. I can hear you. I can feel you shaking your head like, holy shit, Tally. Run it back. Run it back. Play that shit again. Which takes me to number 8. You have to do the emotional work in the relationship, which I have mentioned before. Doing the emotional work in the relationship is essentially the effort you make to emotionally adapt to other people's needs. Shout out and call out to all my people pleasers. What's good? I see you with your, never mind, it's okay, I'll do it. You know what? I got it. It's just easier if I do it. Fine. Yeah, I mean, if you want to come over, that's no problem. You can come now. I mean, it's not a great time, but yeah, that's fine. All of that. I see all that. When you start to heal from growing up with an EI parent, you will become empathetic. You will have way more common sense. You will be aware of motives, and you will be able to anticipate how someone is likely to respond to your actions. When things go wrong, for example, in a relationship, the need for emotional work like skyrockets, but it can't be one-sided. So when you're doing all the emotional work in a relationship, you're eventually going to become incredibly resentful because no one is going to be able to tolerate apologizing without behavioral change. Because EI parents are world-class at blaming, projecting, and making things worse by accusing others, they completely disown their responsibility and they, in a way, disenfranchise themselves from the relationship with the family, but then reinsert themselves as the leader of it and someone that everyone should be pandering to at all times, especially when it comes to their level of comfort. The more you acquiesce, the more you lose your autonomy. And that takes me to number 9. And no one wants to lose emotional autonomy and mental freedom in a relationship. Essentially, because EI parents see you as an extension of themselves, they disregard your inner world of thoughts and feelings. They literally don't care. In fact, they claim the right to judge your feelings as either sensible or unwarranted. They do not respect your emotional autonomy, your freedom, and the right to your own feelings. They don't care because your thoughts should reflect theirs. They react with shock and disapproval of you if you have ideas that offend them. You are not free to consider things even slightly outside in the privacy of your own mind. Don't even think about it, kind of stuff like that. How would you, I didn't even think that you would be doing something for the holidays. Like, yeah, obviously we're going to be doing it at your house. You're obviously hosting and doing all the work and not having anybody thank you ever. Or no, I'm not going to be with the kids this weekend. I already told you that. Even if they didn't tell you that, there's an assumption that you somehow psychically kind of always have to know what they're thinking. So that leaves your nervous system on total and complete hypervigilant eggshell type environment, i.e. the functional freeze. So if you haven't heard the term functional freeze is a chronic state of survivability. You are absolutely frozen and paralyzed because you are emotionally overwhelmed, deeply disappointed, in a chronic state of discontent, and that state sustains itself so seriously because of just the overwhelming emotional deficit that you do not have, that you will stay in a performative state, constantly trying to survive, but frozen at the same time. So you will create certain strategies to mitigate your own survivability and those around you. So it might look like those who are in the healthcare service industry who are like ER type of responders, because they have to create such a baseline of like real physical safety chaos, because it gets them out of their own way and somehow emotionally lowers the bar of their nervous system, because that's how shot it is. So they have to lower the level of extreme nervous system dysregulation in order for their nervous system to feel even slightly regulated. So let that part sink in. Where are you lowering your bar because there has been emotional irregulation in your life? Where are you doing that? So I'm going to let you sit with that while I answer a couple of questions that came in. So there's a question that came in around power versus force. And I talk about this in the middle part of the book from David R. Hawkins. And I'll just give my spin on it because I talk about force, which is what you're seeing right now. And I realized that I had not hyper-gridded and put Tally Miller and the new direction for Super Freak, with me being kind of at the helm of it, and then Super Freak being the extension and the educational piece, which I'll talk about in a minute. But I hadn't gridded that. I hadn't put like protection around it. I hadn't thrown it up into the highest timeline. I hadn't connected with the Grand Central Council and my pure source energy. I hadn't done the same thing I did with Super Freak. And I realized that that has to do with some little gremlins and static energy being able to get in. And I think that's exactly what happened with TikTok. So I did a complete and total clearing protocol on myself. And what was cool about this happening is I got a shit ton more information about a total and complete, like the ultimate cleansing protocol is basically what was shown to me. And I automatically downloaded the information. And I got these really kind of cool holographic medallions from the Grand Central Sun Council. And a lot of that has been infused into all of the work that I've done. So I went back and I purified all of the frequency work to make sure that, which I do all the time, to make sure that the work stays really good. And ran it through myself and specifically ran a protocol around restoring the platforms on TikTok if that is of the highest and greatest timeline, and really putting all of the work into the highest and greatest timeline and seeing, you know, connecting with the right people and having the momentum pick up just to see who would come into the field and how the work will be able to ripple into the collective. And so I could be the most, let's say, the highest version of me I can be to keep the work as integral as possible so people can have sustainable, lasting change. How can I continue to be a conduit and get out of my own way? How can I do it from the highest level order? Continue to get me out of my own way and show up to do the work from the highest level order, right? Like constantly asking me how I can be of service without the detriment of myself and protect the work. I'm like very protective of the work, right? So I'm going to see what happens with the whole TikTok of it all after this clearing protocol. But like immediately I felt a complete and total shift. And I was really kind of starting to get tired because there's a lot on my plate right now with getting everything launched and recording all this stuff. And, you know, I mean, every single day I'm very, very, very focused. And also I have a move inside of all of this, which I'll talk about on another podcast. I'll kind of tell you what I mocked up and how I created this manifestation for myself and how it came in so wildly different that I had a total and complete identity meltdown over it. But that's again for another podcast. So Super Freak is headed into moving into a process to teach you how to implement quantum psychosomatics into the work that you're already doing. So stay tuned for more details on that. In the book around power versus force, and you're seeing this now with this power and this last-ditch effort to infiltrate anything of high-level light and any low-hanging fruit that this draconian virus can tap into, it's going to try to do that. So protect yourselves really, really well. Use the matrixy patterns, the grounding cords. If you were going to throw up a grid around your body, what would that look like? Give yourself permission to create a protocol to protect yourself against any external forces and factors. And it's nothing to be afraid of, but just be aware of it. And yeah, so power, you're seeing the power dynamics play out now. There's very immature power. There's the illusion of bullying, which is very much in the field right now, that has to sustain itself on other people's energy. So I've talked about this before, where the high holy war is for the heart center and for the human spirit. And when you have a self-sustaining module, it's basically like infinite energy, which is what the heart center is. You don't need anything to sustain itself. That's the fractal of God. That's the fractal of the divine. It's really about personal and total autonomy and sovereignty. When you outsource your power and you rely on other things, you start to slowly and slowly close off your heart space. And when you do that, it's just a matter of time before the light goes out. And that's what's happened to a lot of people. They've closed off their heart centers and they're using a lot of workarounds and bypassing. And so you'll have people who have extremely powerful root and
solar plexus or really, really, really powerful ideation, but they're not grounded and fully in their bodies. Elon Musk is a really great example of that, right? Trump is a really great example of that. Like, not totally, they're in their bodies, right? But there's parts of their bodies that are closed off. So if you look at Trump, he's basically like a raging narcissist with a big heart. And if you look at Elon, he's like an enormous kid with loads and loads of ideas, but they're not very grounded. He's been able to ground himself enough to get these things through, but then he just like wants to fuck off and like go play. So he's got root, solar, loads and loads of upper information, like basically all ET knowledge coming into him kind of all the time. And his source of power bypasses the heart center and he pings right into this crown chakra. But what happened when he lost his child, Xavier, who was trans, is that his heart center started to kind of open and now he's starting to have, he's reconciling that within himself. And with Trump, he's actually really learning how to become more coherent. So he has rage, he's got tons of ego, so does Elon. But there also is this like empathy piece that's coming in for a majority of people who are kind of starting to follow him. And then you see the Kamala side of kind of things where there's just absolute, total and complete mind control going on. She has absolutely no sovereignty. She has no personal freedom. And it's kind of wild. So people who end up following this type of ideology will have very, very, very strong views without a lot of backup. Like they will think emotionally with no reason or logic. And I mean, it goes for both extremes, right? They believe what they believe, but they don't know why they believe it, basically. But you're seeing that even more so with this deep state, because that's what mind control is. You don't even know that you're being controlled until it's almost like too late. So power is coercion, or force is coercion, and then that creates power. Real power is coming from an awakened state where you have full sovereignty of your perception, your awareness, your attention, and your heart space. You are self-sourced, which I can't talk enough about. You hear me talk about this all the time. Fully self-fulfilling, self-sourcing individual, right? And then that momentum of that torsion just gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger the more that you go in and the more that you go in and the more that you go in. Like kind of that visual of Neo remembering who he is for a minute and he stops the bullets of the agents, then he goes into the agents and realizes that he is everything. He became completely sovereign in that moment. He started to transcend time. He started to transcend the construct. He started to see through the illusion. And then he kind of had to play both worlds for a while. That's kind of what's happening now. You're seeing these multiple realities break down at the same time. And that's really what the difference between power versus force is being able to awaken to a state where you are running infinite and perpetual intelligence, solo mio. Okay, with that, I will end it with this question from Candace: how to discern when to push through resistance versus pushing from a place of fear? So both of those are fear-based. You will know if you're pushing through an edge if you feel uncomfortable, but there's kind of like this curiosity and little sparkle at the end of that resistance. If you're pushing like really so much and you can feel like your nervous system has nothing left, that is when you know you're pushing through a self-abandonment pattern and you're about ready to bottom out. But if you're coming up against an edge where you feel like, man, I usually move into a state of paralysis right now and I'm going to step into contrary action and just keep it moving and then see how my body feels. You'll know if you're moving into curiosity because you're looking for a different experience, a contrary action, contrary experience, contrary behavior, right? Or if you're just absolutely dogging it and that's been your go-to and that is a hypervigilant survivability pattern, martyr pattern, self-abandonment pattern. And again, just pay attention to the quality of those two experiences. And if the experience is feeling very reminiscent of a behavior that you're trying to change, then step into a different type of contrary action or behavior, or sit still, audit it, audit the behavior, and then see how you feel, and then take the next indicated action. All right, you guys, thank you so much for allowing me to be very raw on this podcast, and I will see you in a couple of weeks. Take care.